Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, hour number two on this Saturday afternoon, 106.7 The Fan on your AM-FM dial. It's on the Radio.com app and on our stream at TheFanDC.com. Appreciate you hanging out with us for today. Danny Noakes with you. Our guy Ryan Clary producing the show. We're going to head on over to the AAA Always On Call listener line to welcome in our first guest today. He's a former Virginia Tech offensive lineman. He's the founder of Victory Life and my co-host on the Victory Life Legacy podcast. Let's welcome Dwight Vick to the program. You can find him on Twitter at Vick757. Dwight, always a treat catching up with you, my friend. What's going on today?
Hey, what's going on? I'm good, man. Just finished seeing my last client, and I'm getting ready to go home and catch some college football and spend some time with the fam. Oh, and by the way, happy birthday to your producer, Ryan. I meant to tell him that when he hit me up.
Yes,
man.
Sir. Yeah, he's very
thank you, Dwight. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah, man. And I know you can't get turned like you want to with COVID, but you can still have a party at your house and make it happen.
I wish.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm interested. I was shooting him a text that day when his birthday does cross the calendar here in the next 9 days to see what exactly his plans are. But Dwight, I'm with you. I'm gonna be watching some college football not too long from now. Hopefully, when we jump off the air, we got number 9 Indiana and number 3 Ohio State in action right now. It's second quarter, 11 minutes to go. It's actually a tie ball game, but. Before we go on the national scale here, we need to just get this out of the way, because what's going on with the Virginia Tech program right now is troubling, to say the least. And I'll start out by asking you something very simple. As you have observed this program now for over two decades and you've been watching college football a long time, you, of course, a part of the Virginia Tech program when it was really ascending to becoming a national brand, what do you think is going on with this team where they can't close games? They come out of the gate slow from time to time. They're just really inconsistent. Where does it start? What are you noticing?
You know, what I notice, Danny, is that Virginia Tech at times doesn't have an identity. And at times they come out flat. And I don't want to put all that blame on Coach Fuente and his staff, but they don't seem to play with the same sense of urgency or confidence that they have in previous years, even prior to Coach Fuente. If you look at his first year when he got there, they hit the ground rolling. He was coach of the year. They won the Coastal Division. They took Clemson all the way down to the wire with a chance to tie the game. And Coach Fuente said after the game they lost by a touchdown. But he said he was going to go for two if they had scored. And they were right there in the red zone. And they had all the momentum, and the future looked so bright. But, you know, after that season, they went 9-4, finished the season ranked. But they still looked like they were trending in the wrong direction. And a lot of the streaks are being broken, but it's not for the right reasons. When you talk about losses in their last 32 games, they're 16-16. You know, you talk about a few years ago, they were 6-7. After losing in a bowl game in the Military Bowl to Cincinnati, first losing season in 2026 season. So right now they're at a crossroads. You know, there's a lot of speculation and rumors and hearsay about buyouts and if they can make it happen or if they finish this. Look, I've been on teams, even if you played high school ball or collegiate ball, if you were fortunate and blessed to play pro ball, no matter the sport, team sports, you got to tune that noise out, and they got to stay together if they want to right the ship and at least finish on a strong note and try to win two out of three and get to a bowl game. I think if they struggle down the stretch and lose to Pittsburgh today, even though UVA is a rival and they've had their fair share of struggles, those are two tough games left with UVA and Clemson. And, you know, the noise is getting louder and the elephant in the living room is getting bigger. As I told people on Twitter and I've done other radio shows, I'm not going to wish or push for a guy to be fired or bought out. Mm-hmm. I just think that's nonsense. But at the same time, being close to this program, being part of the players and teams that help build the traditions and the expectations, accountability is essential. And everybody's been dealing with COVID, and everybody's been trying to manage this awful virus, and it's affected so many people professionally and personally. You still have to go out and win ball games. No one's going to feel sorry for you if you lose to Pittsburgh today, and nobody felt sorry for you when you lost last week to Miami, a game you should have won, as well as Liberty. So what I see, Danny, is a lack of sense of urgency at times, very perplexing play calling. With all that talent they have on offense at times, they run the ball on 3rd and 6 and 3rd and 7 when they should be airing it out. I hate second-guessing coaches, but I speak for a lot of people, not just alumni and former players, but Hokie Nation. And it's disappointing at times because, you know, if you take a step back, Virginia Tech could easily be 6-2 and have a better record. But at the same time, we don't deal with hypotheticals.
That's
and
right
now the reality is they're average to below average football team.
Yeah, and you made a good point about how the virus is affecting everybody. And of course, we can't look at this season without considering what the pandemic has done in terms of preparation, in terms of fans being in the stands, which, you know, it, from a monetary standpoint, it obviously affects the athletic department, but it also affects the flow of the game and the advantage that home teams have in college football when they're playing. So that's a factor. But to me, it's one thing to lose to a Clemson in the ACC championship game by a touchdown. It's one thing to even lose the game that they lost last week against Miami, who's technically a top 10 team, yes, but are they one of the 10 best teams in the country? No. It's another thing, Dwight, to lose to teams that you're 2 touchdown favorites on. Like in Fuente's first year, they lost to both Syracuse and Georgia Tech, who they were 2 touchdown favorites over. Liberty, ODU. I mean, these losses are kind of starting to stack up here. And, you know, you mentioned the lack of sense of urgency that this team has with so few games left to play. The only way that they're going to come out of this in a positive way is if they come together and figure out a way to run the ball offensively and just execute like they're capable of doing.
No doubt, D. And at the end of the day, man, Virginia Tech's got to play like their hair's on fire. I know that's the old school saying, but you got to unload the playbook. You know, I'm not going to get carried away and say you're coaching for your jobs or this is some longest yard movie or whatever.
Right.
But at the end of the day, you are right on when you talk about the disappointing losses, especially to in-state programs like Liberty, ODU. Of course, JMU was on Frank Beamer's watch. But even on that loss, he finished the season going 11-2 and winning an ACC championship and playing Stanford in the Orange Bowl. Mm-hmm. It's tough replacing a legend, just like Justin Hamilton, a new defensive coordinator, is doing with Bud Foster. But at the same time, some of these losses are unexplainable. And, you know, Liberty – you know, that's just a disappointing loss because there was a time, and I don't mean just years ago when I played, but there was a time when it came to Virginia Tech football between the years of 2004 and 2011, there were no in-state schools that wanted to see them because you knew when you went to Lane Stadium or even if you played them in a neutral site, you were not going to win. Right now, when I look at Virginia Tech and I went back and rewatched the game, Liberty did not come in there. I know the fans weren't there, but they weren't intimidated. And they matched Virginia Tech player for player. That's shocking and beyond disappointing when you're talking about Hokie Nation and their fans and the Virginia Tech football program. And I'll say this, and I'll add this, D, for your listeners and the Virginia Tech followers. Virginia Tech, after winning the Coastal Division and Coach Fuente was coach of the year, they have not won anything significant. They've had some good games and some good wins. When you talk about division titles, bowl games, you know, New Year's Day bowl games, the expectations that Tech fans were used to, they haven't done anything. After Stroman and those guys left, this team has just basically been a good to average team and sometimes below average, basically hovering around mediocrity.
Yeah.
And that's very disappointing. And I don't get how you come out flat when you have not won anything and you have not earned the right to come out flat. That's the problem.
Yeah. And per usual, I think you're spot on with your assessment that it's probably too early to start calling for anybody's job. And certainly we don't wish that anybody gets fired or anything like that. But if you're Justin Fuente and you lose this game to Pittsburgh today, well, the calls for your job are only going to just get louder. And he's protected by that big buyout of his contract, which I don't think Virginia Tech is in a position to spend. Most athletic programs are probably not considering what the pandemic has done to hamper revenue for athletic departments. But I guess you never know. I mean, for goodness sake, South Carolina just let go of Will Muschamp, and now Shane Beamer's talking about or being talked about as potentially replacing him.
Yeah, my guy Shane, my teammate.
Yeah.
I contemplate texting him and just getting a feel, but I'm not trying to be part of that story, man. He wouldn't tell me anything anyway. But isn't it amazing, man? You know, that's going to ruffle some feathers, man, if Fuente doesn't finish out strong and Shane Beamer ends up being at one of those schools or a school like South Carolina. And then, God forbid, well, for him, I want him to do well if he gets it. But if he does do well and we're still hovering around 500, mm-hmm. that's going to really get those noises running, getting louder for a coaching change. And I'll just add this when it comes to coaching changes. At the end of the day, it's a what have you done for me lately business. And that goes for any job we have, no matter if it's radio, whatever it is, you could be working in Foot Locker. You got to produce. Numbers talk, wins talk in the game of sports, especially in football. And the reality is if you hold players accountable, coaches have to be held accountable too. And I don't know Coach Fuente personally. I think he's a great coach. He knows the game. But you got to find ways to win ball games, especially against inferior opponents and teams you're favored. That's just the way the game goes. I mean, look at Penn State. The coach up there can recruit his tail off, and he's had some great seasons. But all of a sudden now at 0-4, they're talking about buying him out or telling him to hit the road. That's just the way it goes, especially in the power conferences like the SEC, man. So it's big boy business and big boy football.
Yeah, it is. And man, there's just a lot of uncertainty in not just college football, but sports everywhere right now because of the pandemic. But real quick before I let you go, more likely to get into the college football playoff here, does Clemson claw their way back or does Notre Dame hang on and win the ACC and earn one of those spots?
You know what? I promised a friend of mine that listens to our podcast, because you and I were pretty hard on Notre Dame given their history. I'll say this. I'm going to go with Notre Dame. And
okay.
I know in years past, you know, people are like, oh, the Irish. I know Clemson was without their star quarterback, a future first round, and first pick most likely. But they still showed some moxie. And they played with a sense of urgency. They played with passion and purpose. And right now, I think the Irish hold on. Usually they're good for an upset. I thought Boston College could catch them slipping. But right now they're playing – and they're taking advantage of the fact that, you know, right now with COVID, a lot of conferences and things are off kilter, but they've earned the right to be in the conversation this year. And I think for the first time, they are legit. So I'm going to go with the Irish.
All right. I like it. And sometimes it's the team that has created momentum for themselves. And this year, that team is Notre Dame. They've been playing really well. Potential rematch with Clemson in the ACC championship on the horizon. But again, who knows? With everything that's going on right now, if we get to that point. Hopefully we do. But, Dwight, I will let you go, my friend. Enjoy your afternoon of college football, buddy. Always great catching up with you, and we will do it again very soon.
Absolutely, man. Thank you, guys.
You rock, buddy. That's Dwight Vick, former Virginia Tech offensive lineman. He's the founder of Victory Life and the co-host of the Victory Life Legacy podcast with myself. You can find him on Twitter at Vic757. He brings up so many good points, as Dwight always does. And Dwight obviously has a very unique perspective, having been a part of not just the Virginia Tech football program, but I always point this out, and I did when I was in Blacksburg. Dwight was a part of the teams that were really establishing that lunch pail mentality, right? Bud Foster's gone now. He's no longer the defensive coordinator at Tech. It's Justin Hamilton's defense now. And those units that Bud used to have, it wasn't just the defense that had that lunch pail, blue collar, hard work and mentality. It was the offensive line. And you saw Virginia Tech's offensive line this year punishing teams in the early part of the season. But now, over the last few weeks, the loss to Liberty, the loss to Miami, right? They've kind of lost some of their mojo. So they need to come back out with an attitude, run the football on a Pitt team that's not very good, yet they might be physical. Narduzzi's going to have them all fired up. He's a stark-raving lunatic on the sideline, if you haven't watched him before. But they should go out and win this game, and they should do it handily. Will it happen? good Lord, it is a toss-up because I can't even explain how quickly it's falling apart. I mean, you listen to me stumble over my words because I can't put it into words. They're a better team than what they're playing with right now. The only person that I can put it on is the coach because they're coming out flat. There's no sense of urgency. They can't finish games. They had Miami dead to rights last week. You could have lost to Liberty and then showed up the next week and beat a top 10 team in Miami. And you had the lead all game until the middle of the fourth quarter. The excuses are going to stop at some point. And the buyout won't matter because the team is on a downward trajectory. And you can't have that in a conference like the ACC that's weak. You're not going to have Notre Dame next year. It's Clemson's conference entirely. But the Coastal is incredibly weak, and you should win it every year. And the fact that they've only won it once is nothing short of a disappointment. But anyway, we're about to step aside, take another quick break. Another scoreboard update for the Ohio State-Indiana game. Number 3, Ohio State. Number 9, Indiana. Ohio State now a 14-7 lead. 8:57 to go in the second quarter. Buckeyes up 14-7. They are playing this game at home. Indiana on track to cover. That was a big number. 21-point spread for Ohio State. So Indiana so far at least keeping it close. But we'll see. Ohio State can put up points in bunches and, you know, they could ultimately pull away. We'll step aside, take a quick break, come back. One segment before we talk to RJ Anderson, CBSSports.com's Major League Baseball coverage. That is at 1:30. You're listening to 106.7 The Fan. Thanks again to our pal Dwight Vick, former Virginia Tech offensive lineman and captain for the Hokies. All-conference offensive lineman while he was a member of Virginia Tech as well. Founder of Victory Life, co-host Victory Life Legacy Podcast. Good analysis on what's going on with Virginia Tech. That football program is struggling right now, and they get Pittsburgh today. They're on the road, 4 o'clock kickoff. Pre-game coverage starts at 2:30 right here on 106.7 The Fan, the voice of the Hokies, John Lazor, Tech Hall of Famer Mike Burnham, and Wes McElroy on the sidelines. That's your broadcast crew. They've got the call. 2:30 pregame coverage, a 90-minute show before the game itself kicks off, which I believe is on ACC Network. That means your boy won't be watching it because I don't get the ACC Network. Here's my weekly rant against Xfinity and the lack of deal that they got done with Disney to try and land the ACC Network on their platform. I don't understand how it worked out that way. They're the only major cable TV provider that doesn't have the ACC Network. They have all the other ESPN networks. They have all of the other ones. SEC, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPNU, all of the other Disney networks are there except for the ACC Network. I don't understand it. I don't get it. So you're forcing me to go either to a bar, which has happened before. We go to a bar and, you know, it's not ideal because we don't like going to bars right now. A lot of people don't. Some people maybe. You know, we got to wear masks for most of the time and whatnot, except when you're eating or drinking. So that's not as fun unless you can get an outdoor seat. It's happened. Or we could go to a friend's house, watch the game outside because they have some at-risk children. So it's just a big pain in the ass. And it's... I digress, and I won't talk about it anymore. It's something that I have to deal with. I was contemplating not watching the game today anyway because I'm so disappointed in what's transpired over the last 2 weeks. I just can't even it puts me in such a bad mood that it just ruins the rest of my Saturday. And it's Saturday night. You know, Saturday night is the last weekend night. It's supposed to be a night where you can have no worries. You get to sleep in again the next day. And that, you know, we got to worry about Tech screwing everything up and whatnot. So TBD on whether your boy actually tunes into that game or not. Of course, I'll watch it, a little bit of it. And I'll be listening to at least the first quarter of it on my way back down to Richmond. A lot of times I go back to Chantilly after these shows and I go see my parents and my brothers. But today I'm just straight shot back to Richmond, back where I live. Part of the reason is because the fam is on their way down to the Outer Banks already. They're going to Kerala for Thanksgiving. So I'll be meeting them down there on Tuesday or Wednesday. TBD on that. But we're also going to be joined by RJ Anderson, CBSSports.com's Major League Baseball coverage, next segment. And our buddy Dylan in D.C. called a little bit earlier in the show and had some questions for us about Chris Bryant potentially coming to Washington and the trade rumors that have been circulating. DJ LeMahieu has also been a name that has been mentioned in connection with Washington, although it's happened years in the past as well, and he's never ended up coming. I'm also going to ask him what the next step here for Theo Epstein is, and we could also ask him in the same vein what it is for the Chicago Cubs, because Epstein stepped down as the president of baseball operations for the Chicago Cubs, the man responsible, or at least the architect of the 2016 World Series champion Cub team that broke that 100-year Billy Goat streak. And then he was also the architect behind the Boston Red Sox team that broke the curse of the Bambino. So he's got as good a resume as a general manager, a president in baseball, as maybe anybody in MLB history. And as we get ready to step aside for this break and talk to RJ next segment, I thought Mark Zuckerman, who covers the Nationals for Masson, put it very eloquently, as he often does on Twitter. And basically, I'm paraphrasing, what he said was, Nats fans should appreciate having Mike Rizzo here in D.C. and having him for as long as they've had, because I believe the year was 2009 when they got him, and that sort of consistency, longevity, staying in one place doesn't really happen very often in Major League Baseball. Doesn't really happen a lot in professional sports. So, tip of the cap, hopefully Rizzo's able to cobble together a team going into 2021 that's a little bit better than the team that came and tried to defend their World Series championship in 2020. A lot of injuries hit the team, so it's tough to, you can't really blame anybody for it, not to mention the season was only 60 games long. But we still wonder, who might they plug in at third base if Keyboom's not the answer? They get Castro back, but who are some of the other guys that might step up? We're going to talk some baseball coming up next with our pal RJ Anderson. You're listening to 106.7 The Fan. So we're still monitoring this Indiana-Ohio State game. 3:26 to go, second quarter. Indiana with the ball. Buckeyes now have that 21-7 lead. This is the point in the game where it'll go two directions. Either Ohio State is going to start pouring it on, and they're going to win by 4, 5, maybe even 6 touchdowns. Or Indiana scores here before the half, and it's a touchdown game before the end of the half, and we actually have a good contest and a fight to the end. Now, Ohio State, they're talented enough. They could blow it open in the second half, too. But Indiana, I think, a veteran team. They're well-coached, good quarterback. Even though they're playing on the road, there's not as much of a home field advantage. This is a good opportunity to them. It's a good opportunity for them to try and not only keep it close, but potentially, it's close enough towards the end, maybe steal this game. We'll see, and we'll continue to monitor it as it closes in on halftime and towards the end of the game. Remember, we're with you up until 2:30. Right now, we go back to the AAA Always On Call listener line, and we welcome in our second guest of the day, a good friend of mine, RJ Anderson, CBSSports.com's Major League Baseball coverage. You can find him on Twitter at R_J_Anderson. RJ, been a minute since we caught up, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing good, man. It's good to be talking some baseball with you. I know we've got the owners' meetings that just concluded and the winter meetings that are also going to kick up here over the next couple of weeks. There's actually some interesting stuff here to get to when it comes to the upcoming 2021 season and some of the movement that we've seen. So the first thing that I want to ask you about, though, is Theo Epstein and the news that we got this week, where he stepped down as president of the Chicago Cubs. He helped them bring their first World Series to Chicago in over 100 years, breaking the curse of the Billy Goat. Did the same thing in Boston with the Red Sox. Broke the curse of the Bambino. He was the architect behind that team. So I guess the question is, what's next for each of them? Will Theo Epstein be able to do the same thing in his next destination? We'll start there. Where do you think he would end up?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, the answers are pretty diverse right now around the industry. There's been some speculation that he might even eye the commissioner's office if Rob Manfred is replaced after the next round of CBA talks. There's been speculation that he might go to politics. There's been speculation linking him to various teams, including expansion efforts. Basically, the only thing that you can really kind of take for as a certainty, I guess I would say, is they probably won't pop up next year. It'll probably be next winter before he lands a new job. But, you know, this is a guy who's not going to want for options. If he wants to become a general manager or, you know, president of baseball operations of a team, they're probably going to make room for him. So pretty much whatever he wants to do, the league is going to be his sandbox.
Yeah, that's definitely the sense that I get right now, because I, you know, if you go to social media, and this is pretty much the case whenever any sort of news like this comes about, but you're seeing all sorts of speculation on 100 different teams that he could go for. Not literally 100, but I mean, we've seen pretty much every team, it seems, mentioned, maybe with the exception of, you know, like a Yankees or a team like Washington, who's got Mike Rizzo in place right now. And I brought this up, RJ, because I thought it was a really good point that, that Mark Zuckerman of Masson, who covers the Nationals, made, in that the Nationals and their fans are very fortunate to have had Mike Rizzo for as long as they have, because GMs don't necessarily get to stick around that long. And he's had success, obviously, as the GM of Washington, and it's just been a treat to really watch him. And the fact that, you know, Theo Epstein has had so much success, 2 World Series championships, and he's deciding to step away, you know, that longevity is missed out on for a lot of these situations, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Nationals fans have kind of seen how some other teams treat their general manager position with the manager position, right? You know, the Lerner family is notoriously unwilling, or has been notoriously unwilling, to spend money on that position, and that's led to a lot of turnover there and a lot of almost like a revolving door situation. Now, obviously, it seems like that has changed with Davey Martinez after the World Series win, but you know, before him, they went through, what, 4 managers in 8 years or something like that, something absurd. So, yeah, some other teams have experienced that kind of turnover at their GM positions.
RJ Anderson, CBSSports.com's Major League Baseball coverage is with us on the AAA Always On Call listener line. You can find him on Twitter at @r_j_Anderson. RJ, we had a caller earlier in the show, Dylan, who was asking us about a couple of different player rumors and where their next destinations might potentially be. So MLB.com's John Morosi has a couple of different reports that Nats fans are paying attention to. We'll start with this one because he tweeted yesterday the Nats had some interest in former Yankee second baseman DJ LeMahieu, but now there's also a report that DJ wants to stay in New York and that he could end up with both the Yankees or the Mets, and both of them are on his short list. So my question is, how likely is LeMahieu to be on the move at all? Do you think he goes anywhere?
You know, I think that he's such an interesting player because if you really look at some of the ball tracking metrics out there and you look at, you know, his batted ball data, it really points to him being better suited for Yankee Stadium than any other ballpark, especially when it comes to his power production. This is a guy who's going to hit for average no matter where he plays, but if he wants to, you know, compile those home runs, he should probably stay with the Yankees and, you know, stick with that right field area because, you know, if you put him in Citi Field or wherever, he's probably not going to hit for the same amount of power, same with most any other ballpark. I do think there's a chance he ends up with the Mets just because it seems like they're going to be the big spenders this winter. And, you know, if Robinson Cano suspended for the season, they could use a second baseman. They could also use potentially a third baseman, depending on what they do with Jeff McNeil. So that would make sense. But, you know, I do think it's unlikely that he leaves the state of New York.
Yeah, and right field at Yankee Stadium, you bring up a great point. It's a hitter's paradise, absolutely. Now, the other thing here is that Washington being interested in trading for Cubs third baseman Chris Bryant, and he's coming off a bad season, hit just .206, 4 homers, 11 RBIs. How real are those rumors? And, I mean, it seems like if Washington were to go and get Chris Bryant, that it would not bode well for them signing Trey Turner long-term. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. At the same time, I do think there's more legitimacy to the idea of the Nationals trading for Bryant because the Cubs have basically made everyone available.
Yeah,
they're willing to take a little less than market value for these guys, it seems like. And it seems like the Cubs are heading for a hard reset. So acquiring Bryant seems more likely. And, you know, you might actually get him for less than you would think in a trade. Now, granted, you still have to pay him. And if you want to keep him long-term, you still have to work out that long-term extension, which, you know, might be complicated because of who his agent is. But at the same time, you know, he's a very good player for the most part. He did have a down season last year, and he's dealt with some injury issues. But if you're looking to, you know, improve your lineup, he might be one to get, and he might be a value get at that.
Yeah, and I think if Washington were to go after Chris Bryant, they're really, you know, in that win-now mode. And that makes sense considering that Max Scherzer is coming into the last year of his deal. He's probably not going to come back. I know that is probably not what a lot of Nationals fans want to hear, but at this advanced stage in his career, he's going to want probably one more significant sized contract, and I just don't see the Lerners giving that up. So there are a lot of moving pieces here, RJ, that's really going to take some time to play out, but it worries me if they bring in Bryant about Turner. But also, if you go even a little bit further down the road, they're going to really have to open up the wallets to re-sign Juan Soto. And I don't know what that number is going to look like, but if he keeps doing what he's doing, I mean, he's going to command one of the highest numbers probably ever.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But, you know, at the same time, this is a franchise that's kind of in a pickle.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, if they want to continue to contend and make the most of the primes that remain on Strasburg and Scherzer and, you know, make the most of Soto's affordable years, then they're going to have to spend money now. And, you know, there's just not a lot of help coming on the farm system. Obviously, their approach last winter didn't quite work, didn't reap the same magic that it did the year prior in terms of them relying on aging role players. So, you know, there are certainly pros and cons to trading for someone like Bryant or even someone like Nolan Arenado. But at the same time, if you're serious about making the most of, you know, the situation we just talked about, those are probably the routes to take.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to whether or not you need to win now. Do you feel like you need to win now? And I think the Nationals are at that point. A World Series last year, and then, like you said, the primes of Scherzer and Strasburg are closing. Scherzer is much quicker than Strasburg, and I mentioned his contract situation makes it even more complicated. So, yeah, they're going to have to go out and spend money, and that's not something that the learners are used to doing. RJ, I'll let you go, though, man. I'm sure you've got plenty to work on with everything coming up with the winter meetings, but it was great to talk to you, buddy. Appreciate you carving out a little bit of time for us, and we will do it again very soon, man.
Absolutely. Stay safe, everybody.
You too, buddy. That's RJ Anderson, CBSSports.com's Major League Baseball coverage. Find him on Twitter at @R_J_Anderson. And as usual, it's oftentimes a reality check when you're talking to RJ about the Nats, if you're a Nats fan like I am, because the way that the learners run that team doesn't always jive with keeping guys there long term. We saw Harper leave. That was a good move. Letting Bryce Harper walk was a good move. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I know we've only seen two seasons of him in Philly, but I think we've seen enough to know that they didn't need him. They won a World Series without him. They didn't need Harper. Rendon, completely different story. They did need Anthony Rendon. He was a much better all-around player than Bryce Harper was, and you saw that come to light last year when the Nationals struggled. The injuries can't be overlooked, though, because losing Strasburg, I think he only pitched in two games and certainly didn't get what you normally get out of him in those games. And I go back to Starlin Castro. RJ mentioned the plugging in the aging role players worked for them in the winter of 2018, but it didn't necessarily in the winter of 2019 after they'd won the World Series. Had he not gotten injured, I thought he was going to have a pretty good season. Howie Kendrick was still solid last year. Guys, though, like Adam Eaton, you're probably going to let him walk. Michael A. Taylor, you know, Howie Kendrick, those are the guys. Anibal, right? Sanchez, those are the guys that you're probably going to have to let walk. And it's painful because you just watched him win a World Series with the Nats a little over a year ago, and that it still seems so fresh because of we didn't really get a full MLB season. But it is. You have some tough decisions ahead of you to make if you're the Washington Nationals. It will be interesting to follow and to watch unfold. We step aside for one more break in hour two. A reminder, we're with you up until 2:30 when Virginia Tech football pregame's coverage begins. They are on the road at Pittsburgh, a 4 o'clock kickoff. You're listening to 106.7 The Fan. Final segment, hour two on 106.7 The Fan. Danny Noakes with you up until 2:30, so about three segments left. 2:30 is when Virginia Tech football begins their pregame coverage right here on your flagship home for Hokies football in the D.C. area. That's 106.7 The Fan. John Laser, Mike Burnup, Wes McElroy will have the call for you. We still have plenty to get to, though, over the final 40 minutes of the show. To kick off hour two, what I'm going to do is go through some betting numbers from BetQL around the National Football League. BetQL does an incredible job putting together content, and they give some pretty good odds to win these games. So we're going to look at their model and see exactly what they've done in terms of Washington football team games, because I've got some interesting numbers there. I've got some numbers on the Ravens. So we have some interesting games to get to. They even have some college games on here that we can spotlight as well. Now, again, the Ohio State-Indiana game, which we're monitoring, it seems like there's always, at least for the last two shows that we've done, there's always one game to monitor in college football while we're on the air. And today it's number 3 Ohio State, number 9 Indiana Ohio State with a 28-7 lead as they go into halftime. Now, I believe right before we brought RJ on, it was 21-7. Indiana had the ball deep in Ohio State territory. And I went back through the play-by-play because I don't have the game on here in my studio. But I wanted to find out what exactly happened because Indiana was in position to cut it to a one-touchdown game. And now all of a sudden they find themselves down by the 21 points that Vegas said that Ohio State would win by. And so what happened was first and 10 at the Ohio State 13-yard line, Ryan. Penix Jr., the quarterback for Indiana, who's been very good, threw a pass, complete to David Ellis, 6 yards, fumble, recovered by Ohio State's Baron Browning. And so those are the plays right there that will cost you a game. Deep in Ohio State territory, Indiana fumbles with a chance to cut the game to 7. Ohio State goes right back down, 9 plays, 93 yards, bing, bang, boom, 28-7 Ohio State, now with a 3-touchdown lead going into halftime. So, if you listen to me and you bet Indiana, although the game had already started when we were talking about betting, so that couldn't have happened anyway, but you would not be in a good spot. Ryan was the one that was talking about that 21 points. I know Ohio State, they deserve that confidence that Vegas is giving them. And now you can see why. So it's such a crapshoot, man. College football's so weird this year with no fans in the stands. And because I mentioned this, I've mentioned this a few times on the radio, on podcasts, whatever. Across any sport, baseball, football, basketball, because of the fact that there's no fans in the stands, the offenses across all those sports will be benefited. Because it's more like that walk-through atmosphere that you're kind of used to warming up for a game or, you know, implementing the final touches of your game plan right before it starts, maybe the day out or something like that. It's just a more relaxed environment, and that benefits the offense. And certainly in football, because, when you have the home team is on defense, you're making as much noise as you possibly can to try and distract the offense. And so now the offenses don't have to worry about that. And I think you're seeing it. I think it's the same I think you could make the same case, though, in basketball and baseball, too. You know, when you're dribbling down the court, pull up for a three, and there's not 10,000 in the college game. Sometimes there are only 10,000 fans there. I believe that's how much Castle Coliseum sits. But if you're talking about, like, an NBA game, you know, seating closer to 25, 30,000 people, they're not there. Well, it's probably going to be a little bit easier to hit some of those shots in crunch time than it would be if there were a larger amount of pressure with all those fans in the stands. That's just my 2 cents. Like, you watched the Major League Baseball playoffs this year, and there was some great drama. The Braves had a 3-1 lead on the Dodgers in the NLCS, and the Dodgers came back and won. And those games were bonkers. I mean, they were fantastic. And if you're a true baseball fan, you're going to enjoy watching that no matter what. But maybe the more casual baseball fan didn't have that same feeling. Imagine as we're watching the Nationals go on their run to win the World Series last year. Imagine if there were no fans in the stands for that wild card game. Would that have been the same? Would it have felt the same? Of course it wouldn't have. Would the Nats have even been able to come back without all those fans in the stands and kind of, you know, giving them some extra juice? Maybe. I don't know. But it certainly would have been, at the very least, a very different situation. It would have felt very different. And so I think you're seeing offenses benefited by the fact that there are no fans in the stands. I think that's a pretty simple concept right there. So as we get ready to take another quick break and crank up another 30 minutes, our final 30 minutes on 106.7 The Fan today. Some NFL to get to. I mentioned BetQL. We have some numbers to give you against the spread, what their models looked like, who they might be picking to win some of these games this week. It's going to be fun to dive into because it's Thanksgiving week just about. Tomorrow officially begins Thanksgiving week, if you ask me. We don't have to get to Monday, tomorrow. And so football all day, and then we got the short week. More football on Thursday. Thanksgiving football is, I think we can all agree, it's one of the best. Even if it's not always a great game to start off, because we got to watch the Lions And I mean, sometimes Dallas isn't very good. In fact, the least intriguing game on the Thanksgiving schedule this year, I think, is Washington-Dallas. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. But anyway, we'll step aside. We'll take a quick break. We're coming back, and we've got some betting numbers for you in the NFL. So stick around. You're listening to 106.7 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.